a little bit before lunch, right before lunch. Gradually take your seats again, please. All right, so Tracy Northcott of Tokyo Family Stays and Tracy Northcott Consulting, as well as a co-author on The Hospitable Hosts, as the name would suggest, is one of the top authorities, not just in Japan, but globally, on short-term stays. Specifically in Japan, she knows everything there is to do about all aspects of the market, including the legal aspects, which is what she's going to talk about today. But I'll let you introduce yourself.
Illegal or legal? Hi, everyone. Look, thank you for coming. We have a packed house, so I'm really grateful to see everybody and also to everyone on the Zoom. Hi, I know you guys probably feel a little left out, but, you know, we wish you were here, but please sit back and enjoy. So I'm a bit of an interloper, actually, because this is a real estate summit and my business is really not real estate. My business is, we have a clicker. My business is hospitality. Real estate is my place of business, but in terms of investment, capital gain, all that stuff, I'm not your girl. So, but who am I? Why cannot this click? We don't have a clicker. Okay, what are we going to talk about today? We're going to talk about some licensing, so Minpaku Ryokan, and the differences between them, a bit of history lesson, there will be a test, and the types of licenses, as well as some case studies about, you know, from my own personal experience, and some market comparison for investors. So why is it going that way? This way. So who am I, and why should you listen to me? I've been in Japan actually more than 24 years now. I'm vice president of a software company, N4. That's the reason I arrived. And we do mobile phone software, dictionaries, that type of thing. If you need a dictionary, come talk to me later. I'm also CEO of Tokyo Family Stays and also Tracy Northcott Consulting. In my past life, I was a Golden Guy bar manager. My lovely husband up the back here was also the person running it. And when I was in Australia, I was actually a biochemist and chemist, which has set me completely up for doing hospitality. I'm a multi-passionate entrepreneur. I'm a lifelong learner. I can only tell you what I know from my point of view. I don't claim to be an expert, but I do what I can. But I'm a jack of all trades. So what about the Tokyo Family Stays story? My gorgeous husband is up the back here. But I started the business when our child was quite young. We started off with one property because we kept getting so many visitors from Australia and from everywhere else, and they couldn't fit in our little apartment anymore. So I'm like, okay, let me rent a second apartment, and if I put it out on the short-term rental market, I'll be able to cover my costs if I get a 50% occupancy. Well, that was 12, 13 years ago. It is now a seven-figure empire with cleaners, admin, and also my husband was able to retire from his hospitality job in restaurants and now has come to work in the business and is an integral part of it. The licensing laws here in Japan changed in 2018. That's a whole other... Ask me over a beer what that was like. So we have multiple licenses. We have the houses which have Minpaku licenses. We have Ryokan licenses. But we also have a kanri. So we are Minpaku kanri. So if you don't know about any of these terms, you should have... People that have downloaded the glossary will have all of these... in their hot little hand. So we've hosted thousands and thousands of guests over the last decade, and we have really strong community ties. So we're very passionate about working together with our community and making sure that our neighbours, as well as the small businesses in the area, have an exceptional experience as much as our guests. We also provide emergency housing if necessary. Unfortunately, there is a lot of DV here, so we have actually offered our house as emergency for families escaping DV. We also contribute to women-led NPOs, and we donate any household items that get left behind by guests. We donate that to NPOs as well. So let's talk about history. So if you've seen any of my talks before, this will probably be a good refresher for you. So Minshuku are basically family-operated Japanese-style beds and breakfasts. They've been around forever. Ryokan are traditional Japanese inns. Now, they are a different product. Oh, God, sorry about that. They are a different product in terms of price, service, and experience. But most of the Minshuku traditionally have been out in rural areas, and they've been for travellers passing through. So it's got a long, long history in Japan for home rentals. So, but the oldest, Ryokan actually, is one of the oldest businesses in the world, and it was founded in 705 AD. So hospitality has been around a long time here. As I said before, I'm a dictionary maker, so here is your Japanese lesson for the day. So it's a minpaku is actually a new word, and it's a coordination of a couple of different words. So there's minshuku that I mentioned before, shukahaku, which is like lodging, basically. These words were, you know, combined to be to become minpaku. And this entered the lexicon around 2003. Languages are always evolving, so there's always new words that pop up. So that's just the differences between minshuku, minpaku, and shukahaku. There'll be a test, I told you. So if you didn't get the glossary before, there's a lot of Japanese words that I use, and that if you are going for your minpaku licenses, you will need to know them. So grab the glossary if you haven't already. So that's the QR code. So I prepared, well, my staff actually prepared a whole bunch of really helpful stuff if you're looking at getting into this industry. So I'll just pause here a minute if you need to get that QR code. I love QR codes. They're the best. So as I said, we started off in about 2012, 2013, and it was the wild, wild west. So any property, any listing that we opened up was being booked within minutes of listing it. It was crazy. So there was a bit of a backlash because there were all these tourists going into residential areas, and communities were a bit bewildered and a bit surprised, and of course there was a backlash. So of course regulations came in. This came in at around 2018, where there is a restriction of 180 days. That's at the federal level. At the local level, each individual city can apply additional restrictions on top. So to get through this process, it's not easy. You cannot go and list on Airbnb. You cannot go and rent your property without a license. Full stop, period, the end. You cannot list on Airbnb or any of those without a license. So that's what we're really talking about today, is what's involved in getting a license and what's the difference between a minpaku license and a ryokan license. So what's involved is that you have to really retrofit your house by a licensed electrician to get your safety certificate. Without that safety certificate, you will not get any type of license. So, and then you have to report as well to the Hokenjo. So that's the health department of your city office. Everything is administered at that local level. So there's a federal level and then there's a local level, and that's who you need to report to. We have to track. You have to track all your guests, you have to track where they've come from, get their passports, their nationalities, and number of nights, and you have to report every 2 months, which is a real pain in the butt. So, is anyone here already doing minpaku? Show of hands. Put your hand down, Ashley. So after this licensing came in 2018, there was a big drop in numbers of hosts, because it was... people made it actually too hard, right? There's a lot of people who were doing it, and I thought, oh, well, the squeeze isn't worth the juice. I'm going to get out of the market. And also, the people that were doing it badly, they got out of the market too. So that made it great for people like us who were prepared to put the hard yakka in and actually go ahead and make it a professional operation and do everything correctly with dotting all the I's and crossing all the T's and investing in the business. So there was a rise in this professional hosting. And then that also led to an increase in the standard of hospitality that is being available to inbound tourists, and also allowed for a lot of market segmentation, niches popping up. Are you a treehouse? Are you an igloo? Are you a, you know, are you a ski resort? That sort of, you know, going from a wild, wild west, from an economic point of view, that is a maturation of the market, where you go from free-for-all and into these different market niches. So better because of all the professionalisation that this allowed, there was a lot more community acceptance. And also, it's been interesting that there has been a rise in ryokan licensing for single dwellings. That's what I'm talking about today. If you go past a house and you see this sign on the door, then you know that it is a licensed minpaku. There's a few illegals popping up in the market. You'll see them on Facebook, Craigslist, whatever, asked to see their license. The ward office, the Hokkenjo, is cracking down. So if you are, if you think you're getting a really good deal, ask to see the license of the operator. If they cannot show you a license or they cannot show you an Airbnb listing, they are an illegal. Enter at your own risk. Not to tell you what to do, but that's it. Quick, I won't go too much into this because this is actually a diagram from the government. So, of course, it is completely confusing. This is how the Japanese government likes to do the administration and likes to explain things to people. So here in that right side, I don't have my little pointer, so I can't do it. So yeah, they'll all be downloadable. You'll get the videos. Yeah. We're not going to hide our light under a bushel. You will get all of this stuff. So if you see here, this is this little relationship triangle. The private lodging agent, that's a very fancy way of saying the online travel agency, Airbnb, Booking.com, etc. So they're the ones that actually report as well to the Commissioner of Japan in the tourism. So statistics. Lodgers, another word for guests, and private lodging business operator, so they're hosts. That's at the basic level. If you have the type of license where you are not staying in the property, where the host does not live in the property, then you actually need to hire a minpaku kanri. So that's this minpaku kanri here. So we have multiple properties. We don't live in all the properties. So rather than hire another minpaku kanri, we became our own. So if you're looking at scaling, that's a good business model to aim for. So, I'm just going to look at this. I can't look at that. So, minpaku license versus ryokan license, zoning. Zoning is key. It actually, in that little glossary section, there is also a beautiful picture diagram of what the different zones, the names are, and also what they mean. Because, of course, there's multiple zones because the Japanese government likes to make things extremely difficult. So if you're looking at a minpaku license, you've got more potential zones than you do for a ryokan license. Pretty much ryokans, mixed commercial and above. Mixed commercial or pure commercial. For a minpaku license, so that's the 180-day version, you can only really do that. Sorry, you can do that in the commercial zones as well, but you can also do them in residential zones. Don't ask me to explain all the different zones, but because each address is going to be different, and so as many addresses there are, there's going to be a different zone. I'm just talking broad strokes here. With a minpaku license, you can only rent for 180 days maximum. There are some places, Megaroku, I'm looking at you, that restrict it to weekends only or public holidays. There are certain zones within Shibuya-ku where you can only do school holidays. So it varies from city to city, from place to place, from address to address. You must collect all the guest data, and you have to report every 2 months, which is, of course, dealing with Japanese bureaucracy, and it is a pain. In both cases, you must get commercial fire certification. That you do not pass go at all until you have that piece of documentation, and that is from the Shorbosha. You need to provide the zoom in, which is the floor plan, and maps for where everything is, and also what is the lot number, or you know the fire, what's it called, the equipment. You have to show which equipment you've installed. Fire extinguishers, no, but also the alarms, just like the normal fire alarms and smoke alarms. So they have to be commercial grade, and you have to show the model number that you've installed, and it has to be certified off by a commercial, by a licensed electrician. So you can't just get any old electrician. You need to have that signed off by a licensed. Of course, if you have that license, those electricians are also charging an arm and a leg to, because they know how valuable that is. So due diligence at every step of this. With the Ryokan license, you still have to collect the guest data, but you do not have to report it. You have to keep it for 7 years in-house. If you ever are asked to open your books and say who was staying on this particular date, you need to be able to know who it was and where they came from, and also provide their ID if necessary. I do get calls every now and then from the police. Have you had any warishto? Have you had any like strange ne'er-do-wells who have tried to book your place? We do not accept anybody who was not prepared to provide their ID, because I'm just covering my own butt, because there will be an audit at some point, and I want to have all my ducks in a row. I don't want to, you know, that's not an argument I want to have. So with the Ryokan license, you also have various requirements. I've found that even between Suginamiku and Nakunoku, there are different requirements, and you just have to go on a case-by-case basis. But you do need to have a locked linen cupboard for some reason. I don't argue these points. I don't ask the reason why. I just find out what the requirements are, and I go, yes, no problem, here it is. And you need to have a front desk or someone who is living nearby who can actually be that 24/7 person. So just go through a few case studies. This is my house. I live here. So we built this house purposely with the express desire to have a apartment in the ground floor. So this is North Cottage. My name is Northcott. So it's not really hard to figure out why we've called it North Cottage. So it actually has it. We designed the house with its own separate door. And because we built it in 2018, we were able to get everything new. We were able to tell the architect what we needed from the beginning. Much easier to do it on the design phase than it is to retrofit. We got the Minpaku license in 2018, and we converted it as soon as we got the Minpaku license, which is easier than getting the Ryokan license. We had 180 days then to go and convert that to a Ryokan license, which we did. Best thing we ever did. So that's basically a house hack. So that the income that we earn from this pays most of our mortgage, because as permanent residencies but self-employed, we don't get to get those 0.1% mortgages that everyone else gets. We have to go and get the commercial loans. So our interest rate is 2 point something or other. So being able to offset that with a business makes things a lot easier, and especially during the pandemic. So again, this is my house. The other thing you can. Recirculating baths, where you have the bath reheating, that's kind of a no-no, so we just actually didn't put it in. But you can have it in a Ryokan license, but you just need to prove that you've been cleaning it on a regular basis, and you've got to have all that documentation. So this was expected. So we expected that we weren't going to put a recirculating bath in, and we expected that we were going to have those additional fire requirements. What we didn't expect, and looking back, this is what we would have done differently. We have to have a lock for the gas cooker, which to me is just bizarre. So technically, if someone wants to cook, they need to come to us, get the key, we need to unlock the gas, and then they need to cook. Of course we don't do that, but we yes, sir, we will do this. Just give us the license. And we weren't expecting that linen cupboard lock. Oh, hypothetically. And we have had it. We have had inspection, so we knew that they were going to come and have a look and check that we were checking off all the boxes. The time required to get that license from Minpaku, for converting from Minpaku to Ryokan, was about 6 weeks. Yeah. This is the one we have just updated. This is a very, very old house. It's from the 60s. And this is, I call this rental arbitrage. So we rent this as a commercial lease from the owner. And then we have to pay them rent every month. And then anything we earn over and above that, we get to keep. So we put this on a Minpaku license in 2019, and then we converted it. We've just converted it. It's rental arbitrage. It's a very, very old house. It's got, whoever did the renovations over the years just should have been shot. There's some awful, awful, awful renovations. But this is the notes on that we had from this conversion. We had to have a front desk and a neighbour. Fortunately, my colleague actually rents an apartment right next door. So we used her address as the 24/7 person. So that ticked that box. We needed to put in disposable slippers and toothbrush sets. So we had to pull out all the old, like any slippers that people share, they had to go. But we had to show that we were using disposable slippers and also toothbrush sets. We removed all the floor rugs. My husband will tell you that was a trial. We had to buy all new curtains because they needed to be fireproof. They needed to have that little certificate to say it is a fireproof. We had to put locks on the linen cupboard and also locks on the cleaning supplies. And we swapped out the gas for the IH cooker. Swapped out the IH cooker for the gas. And we moved out one bed for the inspection. Because this has one toilet, you are only supposed to be renting for five people per one toilet. This took 3 months. This was a beast. Lots of paperwork, back and forward with the ward office. And it was a lot, let me tell you. So here's some deal breakers when you are going from Minpaku to Ryokan. Gas stoves, recirculating baths, which is said as a bit of a grey area. You can keep the records. You need a nearby representative, someone who can be walking there or being there within 10 minutes of walking or right next door or living on site. Different coups have different security camera requirements. Suginamiku, which I'm going through right now, is a beast. We need to have some requirements where there's a security camera at the same time recording as 24 hours ago. So real time and 24 hours side by side. Someone needs to be monitoring this 24/7. I'm still navigating how I'm going to meet that requirement. And the zoning. So again, see that glossary for the zoning. There is endless, endless paperwork. Now, I don't do this. I hire people. My life is too short to deal with this paperwork, right? For starters, the language is, even for a native Japanese speaker, the language is hard. It is hard. And it's meant to be, I guess. It's so, you know, you have to be professional and you have to want it. So let me just quickly run through some of this. Each ward and city has their own rules. So if you don't know what you're going to do, when you have an address, before you sign any paperwork, before you get any property, call up your hokkenjo, find out, can you do Minpaku? How many days a year can you do Minpaku, or can you do Ryokan? The nice thing about Japan is that they will have published checklists. So if you do everything on the list, if you get that checklist, and you do everything on the list, and you can show documentation and paperwork for everything, rubber stamp, hanko, there you go. There is absolutely no wiggle room. You cannot bend the rules. There is no payment that you can make to offset any of this. Impossible. People in the hokkenjo do not have any sense of humor at all. You must meet their requirements, right? They're civil servants. They have to be able to justify their decisions, so you make it easy for them. So you can be creative to tick some of these boxes. Like I said, we've got a neighbour next door. We said this is the address that we're using for the staff member who will be overseeing And also, you know, there's some creative things you can do to tick the boxes. But as long as you can show evidence that you've ticked all these boxes, happy days. The laws and the zoning change all the time. So every year, I think they redraw the lines. So I'm actually waiting for the lines to be redrawn in one of my other places, because at the moment it is residential, but hopefully the lines will be redrawn so that it'll become commercial and then I can go and get my hotel license. It's 1 meter off right now. It's 1 meter outside the zone and I'm like, kill me now. So they change all the time, but the squeeze is worth the drink. It's hard. I'm not going to say it's easy. It's hard work and you have to pay someone to do this, right? So I'm going to switch gears now and just talk a little bit about revenue management, because how much can I earn? That's what people want to know. Is this squeeze worth the juice? So I'm just going to introduce Price Labs to you. Now, this is a software company that I use. They do our dynamic pricing, works on market rates, and it's not set and forget, but they will monitor all of the occupancy. They scrape the data from Airbnb, booking.com, hotels, and then their fancy computer gives you a suggestion on what you should be charging, how much occupancy you've got. You can have a peek at your neighbours, what their occupancy is, what their pricing is. And so it's big data. It is so powerful, this tool. I haven't even had all, like, I don't even use all the bells and whistles yet, and I do this for a living. So I had a massive training on it this week as well. So I'm getting there. But if you're using a dynamic, whether you use Price Labs, there's another couple. There's Wheelhouse and there's, like, I think AirDNA, for example. Using a or Beyond Pricing as well. There's a couple of different companies that do this. But using this takes the guesswork out. So you can figure out how much you're going to earn. And you can also be outpacing your competition. So let's just have a quick look. This is a dashboard. If I'm assessing a deal, if I'm looking, am I going to take something on? Or if you hire me to tell you if this is a good deal or not, this is what I do. I grab what's called a market dashboard. I put in the address. I put in the how many kilometres away. And then I get all this information. So I can get estimated revenue for 12 months, the average daily rate. All of these, like, if you're into stats and if you're into yield, this will, I'm going to say, make you really excited. I won't say what I was thinking about saying. But you can also see what people are doing in the area. So you can see the average revenue over 12 months. Now, if you look at these graphs, this is Japan right now. Look back to 2022, look at this growth. This is insane right now, absolutely insane. So revenue is increasing. RevPAR, if you're into hospitality and hotels, you'll know what RevPAR is. I'm not going to give you a training on this today. And you can also look at the average daily rate, which is very important, and also the average occupancy. So again, statistics, if you're into numbers, this is a tool that you need, or you need to hire me and I can explain it to you. Again, some more numbers. You can look at, again, this is what the market is telling you. So the market is telling you what the cancellation policies are of your neighbours. They can tell you how many, you know, this is real data that's scraped from real life bookings. So, now this is the cut down version. So this is the entry level. And so this will, again, you put in the address and it will give you a short list of the sort of information that you need to know. How much money am I going to earn in the next 12 months? Or compared to similar listings in the area, what am I going to earn? And then it'll tell you about occupancy and revenue. This is a very, very powerful tool. And you can filter, and you can change, and you can filter on amenities. You can filter on pets. You can filter on location. Really get very, very granular. So, and then also you can peek. You can have a click and peek at all the listings. So check out your neighbours. So I do this a lot. I look at their reviews. This is all information. This is all part of your due diligence. Is this a business that you want to be in? is this going to be making you money? This takes away a lot of the guesswork. In some cases, I've turned down deals. I've looked at it and went, you know what? The numbers don't support it. I cannot, with the amount of costs that I need to get into it and the running costs, and can I sell this? Is this going to be a good deal? I've turned down based on this. You don't have to go on gut, which is what I was doing before. That's a code. It's an introduction code from me. So yes, they all know that I've introduced you. It is a dynamic pricing software, 30-day free trial, and you get 2 free tokens for the revenue estimator and a free market dashboard. But if you need analysis, if you need me to explain what that dashboard means and what data is relevant, you come talk to me. What else can I tell you about this? But whether you use Price Labs or whether you use something else, it's really up to you. But if you're going to get into Minpaku, you must use some sort of dynamic pricing software. Now, I'm thinking about actually running a little program to really dig into the revenue. So I don't know if anyone is interested, but I can run a little I can run a little mini seminar on just deal analysis. So I'm just trying to talk broad strokes here because not everyone is really into Minpaku, but if you are specifically interested in Minpaku and revenue management, I'm happy to run like a little program, and Price Labs will support it. So let's use their money. So if you want to talk to me further, if you want to talk to me about Minpaku in general, if you're curious about optimizing your existing Minpaku, if you want to get into it or you want to be adding additional revenue streams, because that's kind of my jam, I'm really into really understanding my guest and charging what they're willing to pay, so market price, but also adding on additional revenue streams, babysitting, driving to and from the airport, extra cleaning. This is the stuff that I do. I'm hospitality based. As I said, I'm not real estate is my place of business, but hospitality is my actual business. And there's a free 30-minute call via Zoom. So there we go. That's me. I know people are starving, so I won't. Yeah, speak up. Right. So you would need. You can either hire a shiho shoshi. See, I can say that now. I could never say that. A shiho shoshi. Their prices range anywhere from 200,000 yen up. It will depend. Then you will also need to get to pay for the retrofitting on fire alarms, and that can cost. It depends on the property. That can cost anything from. I've paid up as much as 500,000 yen to get new fire alarms put in because they need to be, they need to talk to each other. So in a normal residential property, if there's a fire in one room, the fire alarm goes off in that room. But in these commercial grade ones, they need to be hardwired. And they also, if there's a fire in one room, the whole house needs to go up. For really big properties, you also need to have a connection to the fire department, and that's in the millions of yen. So it depends. Now, I have someone who I use to do all my paperwork for me. She is not a qualified shiho shoshi. It's interesting how that goes. It's mainly because I've had a relationship with this person for a long time, and she can get it done. A shiho shoshi, a lovely little Japanese law office, it will be by the book. You'll get lovely paperwork, you'll get lovely documentation, and that you'll be, I'm saying anywhere from 200,000 to 300,000, but you should also pay them to do your due diligence as well. So, give them some money in advance to say, can you talk to the ward office and find out what the requirements are, and then you need to go away and cost out every single piece, because you may then have to then do your numbers to say, is the squeeze worth the juice or is it not? So it's all. So before you do anything, do that due diligence and cost it out. Does that answer your question? Okay. Hello, up the back. No. I'm not familiar with Okinawa, but again, everything is managed on that local level. So you, whatever your city office is, the Hokkenjo, give them a call and they will give you what the requirements are for your address. So it is the same across Japan. No. Any money you spend in research and homework is money well spent. Don't be cheap. Don't be cheap on that because you will get, you know, it might cost you more money down the line. So do your everything due diligence before you do anything. Right. Who was it? Right. Yes. Yep. We got the home loan for the whole building, but we get certain tax breaks based on the amount that we use for commercial and based on how much we use for residential. However, this is being recorded. We things like my personal Finnish dishwasher things get charged to that room as a cost. So there's, because I live in the same house, things like my living costs and my grocery costs kind of, you know, they get absorbed into the business costs, and that's what gets reported. And but the mortgage is based, it's actually a Nisetai Jutaku property, it's classed as. So that's like it's two generations in the same property. And we built, that's how we got our approvals for building. And it was after we built the house, that's when we applied, that's when we changed it from the like grandma's suite into a commercial property. No. So it's for, the interest rate is for the whole building. Yeah, we have one mortgage. So, yeah. It depends on the size. We scaled. We are all in. This is my husband and my full-time job. We have a $1.5 million house here in Tokyo. We have a lovely life. We employ a lot of people, and we're very proud that those people also, that has a trickle-through of it, like effect. Their money then goes and pays their families, etc. So, yes. Could we earn more yield doing something else? Maybe. But it's a great lifestyle. It's a great lifestyle. Yeah, we don't have to go to the office at 8 o'clock every morning. Yeah. So, up the back. The Minpaku Kandi. So, yes, we set up Tokyo Family Stays GK. And then we went and got the Minpaku Kandi license on the GK. So we had to show that the directors of the company had to fill in a I'm not crazy form. I'm like, seriously, that's a form. I have to go and stand in front of a notary and say, no, sir, I'm not bankrupt, and no, sir, I'm not crazy. And he just sits there and like stamps, okay, this has been declared in front of me. I want that job. Like, he just sits there and gets paid $100, like, you know, ichimayen per thing, and he doesn't have any accountability. He doesn't have to check that I'm telling the truth. All he does is just stamp. Like, I need that job. It's like, but yeah, so you have to, you know, again, that's a different thing. You have to fill in a bunch of forms and you have to provide a lot of documentation. You have to show that you've already got experience. And because we were operating as solo operators before we incorporated, we could show that history, that we had experience working in hospitality, and that then they gave us that license. We were then not able to get a corporate bank account until we had that license. It's like corporate banking here is a nightmare. You can't get a corporate bank account until you've proven that you've got like a runway, but to actually get that, you've got to do it through personal bank accounts, and it's just, it's a nightmare. So, yeah, so you just have to show, and I've forgotten the actual steps, but again, my she horse, she did this. So, for the Mimpaku Kandi. Well, no, oh, the hotel license with a company? The Minpaku Kandi license, yes. So there are a number of Minpaku Kandis around, and what if you're a solo operator, often what you do is you have to have a contract with the Kandi to get your license if you don't live in the property. Yes. Yes, we can. I've never tested it. We only really manage our own properties, and we did it to save, like, to capture that extra revenue. But yeah, technically we could, but it means that we don't do it, mainly because if you screw up, I'm responsible. So it just gives. So here in Japan, there's always a layer of accountability, and the government wants always to put someone in between the guest and them, so that they've got, so if something goes wrong, they've got someone to blame. And I don't, like, if I don't know you, or if I'm not actually managing your properties, I'm unlikely to do it. There are other companies that do that. That's all they, like, they have 400 properties and they take a percentage of each of your sales. So Sean, yes, arbitrage, yeah. So finding a happy landlord is hard. So I actually have a full-time real estate agent. She asks nearly everybody, are you interested in Minpaku? And that's all she does. And if she gets something available, she'll give me a call and say, I've got this particular property. The landlord is okay. Do you want to look at it? And that's when I do my little deal analysis. And it's like, if I'm not covering all of my sunk costs within the first 7 days, I'm out. Not interested, because it's not just the cost to get in, it's the ongoing costs that you need to be able to cover. And yeah, and you've got to be able to weather the occupancy and seasonality and pricing, and also there are a lot more people getting into the market. So if you don't have a unique point of view as a Minpaku host, or as, you know, as an operator, the only thing that you've got to differentiate is price, and prices are being pushed right now. So be unique. Oh, I've got lots of questions at the back. One from the Zoom, and then you. Yep. Correct. You need to report manually every 2 months. You just have to. Someone actually has to do the admin. You actually have to log into the portal and put in which days you were occupied. Now, at the moment, there doesn't seem to be any correlation between, say, Airbnb and Booking.com and the reporting. It's self-reporting. I'm sure that's going to change at some point. So don't screw around and don't pretend that, yeah, so. No automation that I'm aware of. It's all manual. So. Absolutely. The only way you could find out is because Minpaku licensing is free information, you could drill into the ward office and look for addresses that have 3 or 4 licenses for the condo, and then see if that's actually individually owned condos or whether that's owned by the whole place. So as a general rule of thumb, cannot do individual 1 LDKs, 2 LDKs in a mansion, because you need the kumiai to sign off on it. And you won't get that because they've all changed their bylaws. Not in my backyard. You know, they don't want vacation rentals. The only difference is if the owner owns the whole building, and then you're the owner of the whole building, or you have a relationship with the owner and you can make a deal, basically. So whether that deal is a profit share or whether that deal is you pay above market rates, that's really up to you. But rule of thumb, you will not, don't even look at a mansion rental to do a legal minpaku, full stop, period, the end. So. For 10 years, I was really flying by the seat of my pants, which drives my husband insane because now I have tools where I will analyze how much it costs me, like running costs. I actually, because I've got historical data on all of that, I have a feel of what it's actually going to cost me to run. You remember, utilities are going to be higher. Because guests will waste electricity, will waste gas. Also, there's usually more people. They won't turn off lights. They won't turn off air conditioning, despite how much you ask them to. You need to allow for that. But my rule of thumb is if all of my fixed costs, so that's my rent and all of those things, if they're covered within 7 days or less, then I'm interested. To look a bit further, because then in the next 7 days, that's usually where all my variable costs are covered, salaries, you know, maintenance, all that stuff, and then for the final 14 days of the month, that's just 100% profit. But remembering, if you've got a minpaku license, are you only 180 days a year? So then you need to think about a hybrid model where you're also doing monthly rentals, where you're renting to nomads or you're renting out for a month. Anything over and above a month is not counted as minpaku. That's a whole other seminar on how to do service departments and monthly rentals. So, yeah. When am I? Hold your horses, give me a break. Let me have a drink first. But yeah, I follow me and I'll maybe run that seminar. So, especially if you are really keen to get into it or if you're already doing it. So yeah, contact me. So I think people are hungry. Yes, we're hungry. But wait, there's more. There's more.
First off, thank you very much, Tracy. Yeah, we don't call her the Minpaku Queen for nothing. She knows what she's doing. Before we release you to lunch, we've been fortunate this year to have a new sponsor who would just like to come here and quickly introduce himself so you know who we are talking about and the services that he provides. So Robert, please.
Before he goes in, I use this service for my site.
Okay, less than 3 minutes, no slides, no questions, I promise you. Is this working now? Good. So, I'm Robert. I'm the very proud sponsor of today's summit. My hagaki, my postcard of me staring out to sea, is on each of your tables. So our esteemed presenters today, leave it, Tracy. Our esteemed presenters have been talking about physical real estate and the profitability therein, and this will continue into this afternoon. I'd like to also suggest virtual property as a method of making profit. So we've got physical real estate, which is property, and we've got virtual real estate, which is websites. I happen to own 3 properties in Japan, mostly thanks to Emil, who's having a chat down the back there. And I also own 9 websites that are also profitable. So what about a hybrid approach where we diversify and have both? We have physical real estate, we have virtual real estate. Just quickly, who owns their own website? Sure, yeah, I thought so. Lots of people, right? So if you're not monetizing your website with strong traffic to gain new clients, customers, or ad revenue, advertising revenue, or affiliate revenue, Or even if you're just not that happy, you're not totally happy with your website, please do come and talk to me. Because this is exactly what my team does for my 9 websites every day. We go for strong traffic to gain more clients, advertising revenue, and affiliate revenue. So, look, if you're my proposal to you today is to utilize my team that does this for my 9 websites, because we're now lending this team out to people who want the same gains. And for Tracy, and there's a couple of other people here who are my esteemed clients as well. So, look, if you want real estate management excellence, look no further than Emil's team or Ziv's team. He'll be talking later on this afternoon about this. But if you're looking for website management excellence, please come and talk to me. In fact, I'll put my money where my mouth is. For anyone here who's interested, we'll do a full website audit to reveal exactly where your website is rocking, doing well, and where it may be holding you back from that profitability that I mentioned at the beginning. That's it. 3 minutes. Lunchtime. Name of the company is Innovatius. It's on the Hagaki. Come and talk to me. It's also out on the emails that went out as well. So easy to find me. I don't have a QR code. I'm sorry. That's it. Can I mic drop?
Let's have lunch.